It is 8:30, and we have with us live in the studios once again, Joff Parrish, co-editor at Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning. I just blew in.
You did? Yeah, actually, yeah, you blew in a while ago, and you've just been hanging out since then because you can't
get home. The guest that won't go away.
Luckily, the weather's fine today. You can go home.
Yeah.
So, yeah, lots of hype on the storms, the wind storms we had here in
Washington. Well, and justifiably, it was a big storm. Yeah. But there were, in all of the column inches and all of the miles and miles of verbiage that was spilled in local media and national media about the storm here the last couple of days, there were two words that were conspicuously missing: global warming. Because this storm adheres perfectly to the model of what global warming will look like in the Pacific Northwest, that it will be, it won't get particularly colder in the winter, but it will get wetter and the storms will get more severe. Well, here we are. So, gosh, those links, we do live in a nation of ostriches. But other than that, yeah, it was a big storm. I lost DSL a few times and got it back, so that's God, all I was concerned about was getting it back.
All right.
I need my DSL.
Yeah, you become hooked on technology.
Yes, exactly.
That's the thing.
Exactly. Yeah, the anarcho-primitivists are going to have to go get by with one fewer person.
All right. Moving along, Suzanne Swift, developments with her this week.
Yes, she cut a plea deal early this week with her persecutors at Fort Lewis. She is the young woman who went, well, I guess it's now official, she went AWOL from the U.S. Army last year after having been essentially sexually harassed and in at least a couple of cases sexually assaulted by superior commanding officers in her unit in Iraq, and she was afraid to go back. So she went AWOL. She was traumatized by the events, and in His Majesty, the Army came after her and didn't go after any her attackers at all, but accused her of going AWOL. Well, she cut a plea deal saying, yeah, I went AWOL, but got a reduced penalty out of it. But her accusers, with one exception, are still in the Army and still, actually, I think they're all still in the Army. One of them got reassigned, but they're all still bopping happily along, probably harassing other women in the military, because that's what happens in the military.
All right, so military justice.
Yep, as it were.
All right, and on moving over to King County, King County Council.
Yes, our good friend Larry Gossett is going to be chair of the King County Council in the next year. I don't know especially whether that'll mean major changes, because Gossett's been a fixture on council for years, but given that he is by far the most progressive member of County Council, it's good news. So similar to having Nick Licata running city council, his term is coming to an end, and Brita Butler Wall at the school board, her term is coming to an end. So at least we'll have one of the three.
All right. Okay, well, moving over to national, where there was plenty happening this week, and one of the things that was getting a lot of headlines was Senator Tim Johnson.
Yeah, Johnson effectively did have a stroke. His denials of his office to the contrary, but that you know, even though it was a different cause than usual, it was a genetic malformation of some of the veins in his brain. He has had an internal bleed. The prognosis for that kind of cataclysmic event is actually very good, that there's an 80-90% chance of full recovery. So obviously a lot of people's prayers are with him right now, because on him hinges the control of the Senate. But at the same time, you know, I have kind of personal experience with this, because I had a stroke in 1998, and I was writing columns within a week, because being brain damaged didn't really make that much difference in my line of work. But it doesn't make that much difference in the Senate's line of work either. If you can have Strom Thurmond, who is, pickled and incoherent and over 100 years of age being allowed to keep his Senate seat, then you can certainly have Tim Johnson being able to recover while he keeps his Senate seat. And despite all of the speculation that the Republican governor would name a Republican replacement, he can't do that unless Johnson resigns. And Johnson is probably not about to resign and hand over control of the Senate as he does, unless he dies from his situation. He was in critical condition this week, but it sounds like, anyway, he's recovering now. So hopefully his recovery will move forward, and certainly the leaders of both parties in the Senate are proceeding as though the transfer of control to the Democrats is going to go ahead on schedule. So that's where that stands right now.
All right. And the U.S. presidential race, it's never too early or too late to put your hat in or take it out of the ring.
Yeah. Dennis Kucinich officially announced something that that got inch and inch of column news in the newspapers. And, given his performance in 2004, there's a fairly good reason for that. At the same time, Senator Evan Bayh of Indiana, who's a DLC centrist who's been already had an exploratory committee and was looking at a long shot candidacy, pulled out this week, saying it was too long of a shot. And basically, he is the first casualty of Barack Obama and his rumored presidential aspirations. So, which, given the amount of publicity he's been trying to get for himself over the last month or two, it's probably not a rumor. It probably is already running. But, so we've got one in and one out. And what Kucinich's entry into the race does is actually put a progressive candidate into the race for the first time. Because since the announcement by Russ Feingold of Wisconsin that he would not run, all of the Democratic hopefuls for the presidency in 2008 have been basically centrist. So there is certainly room for an anti-war candidate like Kucinich to run. Probably somebody other than Kucinich would be ideal for it, simply because of the taint of his poor showing in 2004. But he does have a lot of really valuable things to say. So on that basis alone, he's a welcome entry.
All right, moving along. New Jersey.
Yeah, their Supreme Court had ruled that the legislature had to come up with some formulation that allowed marital equity for gays and lesbians, and they acted this week. But what they did did not satisfy any side of the conflict. They didn't dismiss the idea out of hand. They didn't allow gay marriage. What they went for was gay civil unions, similar to Vermont and I think a couple of other states at this point. But it is certainly a step forward. It is certainly by far, excepting Massachusetts, of course, the most populous state to embrace either gay marriage or gay civil unions. And the struggle moves forward because there's still plenty of states, Washington being one of them, where it is illegal for gays and lesbians to have their relationship recognized by law. And that's got to change.
All right. Well, and also on the subject of court rulings, there was a federal court ruling that for California this week?
Yeah. There was a federal judge ruled that California's lethal injection method of capital punishment was unconstitutional. This is the sort of three dose of different drugs that puts you to sleep and then stops your heart routine that is used by 35 states, including the state of Washington. Meanwhile, a botched execution on Wednesday had the governor of Florida, Jeb Bush, oddly enough, since he's very pro-death penalty, suspending the use of the death penalty in Florida. Well, they take a look at why this is just keeps going wrong. So you got two of the country's most populous states not now executing prisoners because their method of executing them, which is a very similar method to what the one we have here, has been found to be flawed, one by a judge and one by anybody who can turn on the evening news. So it's a step forward. At some point, that type of execution is simply going to be ruled unconstitutional because it is cruel and unusual punishment.
Mm. But in Florida's situation, they're just temporarily stopping it.
That may be true in California as well. But even stopping it for a while is better than not stopping it at all. So it's a mixed bag.
All right. Well, as they do every year, the mayors from cities across the U.S. get together and have a conference.
Yeah, and the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which actually is an ongoing organization, it's not just the annual conference, they issued a report this week saying that hunger and homelessness are on the rise in the United States, that they have gone up some 7% from 2005 to 2006 and 12% from 2004 to 2005. Nasty statistics and reinforces the sort of common sense suspicion everybody has about the economy in this country, that the very, very well-to-do are doing quite well, but that the rest of us are, particularly as you get lower in the income brackets, are not doing well at all.
Well, of course, for the homeless, a significant number of the populace there are people who served in the military.
Yes, absolutely, and people for whom public health facilities would make a huge difference as well, and both social service things like shelters and transitional housing, and public health facilities have been badly underfunded for years, for veterans and for everyone. And there's also an increasing number of families and increasing number of children that are being affected both by homelessness and by hunger. That was another piece of the report.
All right. Excuse me. Moving along, Guantanamo Bay ruling this week.
Yeah, a couple of things that came up around Guantanamo Bay this week. One was a ruling by a federal judge again that the inmate in Guantanamo who had sued to sue the United States for his freedom, it was ruled that under the new Military Commissions Act, and this was the first court test of the new Military Commissions Act, that he could not sue the United States government the way the act was written. However, the judge did throw out as unconstitutional the MCA's provision that no immigrant, whether they were legal or illegal, could sue the United States government over their treatment when in custody. That meant that the 12 million legal immigrants in the United States had no rights. Even if they had green cards or they would become citizens or whatever, the judge said that was unconstitutional. So that was very much a victory, although it won't help the Guantanamo prisoners very much. But the Guantanamo prisoners can also just hope that they get transferred to another country, because an AP study shows that of the 245 prisoners that they tracked down, there are actually some 300, some total, but the U.S., of course, doesn't keep any records of this sort of thing, that of 245 that were transferred to other countries, 205 of them, a huge majority, were either released straight away by the country to which they were deported or in custody, or they were tried for the crimes that the United States accused them of and found to be innocent, and then released. So, the worst of the worst, the most heinous killers, the most hardened, violent terrorists in the world, the U.S. kept selling these people, turn out to mostly have been innocent all the way along. How about that? You can't trust your government.
Shocking. All right. Well, moving along, the Golden State Fence Company.
Yes, you may have never heard of the Golden State Fence Company.
Hadn't.
Yeah. Well, many people hadn't, me included, until this week, when it was discovered, or actually they reached a plea deal, I think it was. In any event, the Golden State Fence Company is a contractor that helped build the fence to keep the illegals out near San Diego, the first part of what will now be a 700-some-mile-long fence spotted along the Mexican border in one of the more idiotic gestures of the war on immigrants. But they have already built the fence that is currently in place. Well, they got popped this week for hiring illegal immigrants. Two of their executives, the company is being fined something like $365,000. Two of their executives are facing jail time, and they agreed to pay a combined penalty of it was quite a bit more than that. It was $5 million all between the three of them. So once again, the true entrepreneurial spirit of America comes shining through.
All right, moving along. The Justice Department putting on the brakes this week.
Yeah. The Justice Department has finally decided that it's had its odious foot on the neck of corporate America for too long now, post-Enron, and it has told its prosecutors essentially to lay off. It's put new restrictions on the federal prosecution offices to make it more difficult for them to prosecute corporate crime, basically. Now, this came, there were some fairly mild reforms that came into place after the Enron scandal in 2001. That is what is being changed now. Those reforms are going away. And the equally mild Sarbanes-Oxley bill that passed in Congress required some accounting changes in how corporate America does its work. There's also tremendous pressure and lobbying being put on the new Democratic Congress to gut that as well. So keep your eye on that, as corporate lobbyists haven't gone away just because the composition of the Congress has changed.
I also saw this week that Jeffrey Skilling looks like he's starting his 24 years in
away. Yeah, he's going to go be spending a long time in a place where he can probably
very low security prison,
probably golf fairly easily. Yeah.
All right, and finally, locally, sleaze of the week.
Yeah,
or not locally, nationally, I'm sorry.
Well, yes. We learned from the L.A. Times this week that Representative Gary Miller, who is, surprise, surprise, a Republican from Southern California, is being investigated for essentially using his fine offices in the House of Representatives to benefit his development business in Southern California. And not only that, but also using his congressional staff for personal errands, things like helping his kids with homework, securing tickets to rock concerts and things like that. Pretty devastating report, and so now there's an investigation underway, and so he can join Representative Lewis, who is from nearby in Southern California and also a Republican, on the honor roll of disgraced Republican congressional creatures.
All right, jumping over to international, Iraq.
Yeah, lots going on in Iraq this week. Condoleezza Rice surprising nobody by ruling out any kind of engagement with Syria and Iran on Iraq. One of the many very sensible reforms in Iraq that are supported by the American people. I'll get to that in a little bit, but that nobody in either political party in Washington, D.C. seems to be very interested in taking seriously. The U.S., many reports out on this, is trying behind the scenes to negotiate a replacement for Prime Minister al-Maliki that would also, which would basically mean a change of the composition of parliament. I don't know how they can do that without calling a new election, but hey, what's a constitution between friends? They would also like, as part of that reformation of the Iraqi parliament, to get rid of all the supporters of Muqtada al-Sadr, who is at this point by far the most powerful Shiite faction in Iraq, and who Maliki relies upon for political support. It's kind of doomed. How doomed is it? Well, for starters, no Iraqi who works with the Americans can even admit it to his spouses, because working with Americans is so unpopular. Spouse, I should say, singular, we hope. But the Sunni vice president, who snuck off unexpectedly to Washington, D.C. for consultations with Mr. Bush this week, upon his return, his convoy was immediately attacked by a gang of armed men. He got away okay that time, but probably not next time. And that's just part of the general chaos in Iraq that's been going on. The worst of it this week, that 71 were killed and over 200 Shiite were wounded in Baghdad attacks, bombings, targeting men who were gathered to look for work. That, of course, is where you can most commonly find large groups of people in Iraq right now, as people desperately trying to provide for their families, which is very, very hard to do under the circumstances. The Iraqi economy is in shambles, which is something that that is not widely discussed. A number of interesting polls out this week. The Iraq Center for Research and Strategic
studies, strategic studies, that's what it is. I'm getting more nearsighted by the day, I swear. Shows that 95% of Iraqis think the country is worse off in terms of its security situation now than it was under Saddam. That's, you know, pretty hard to do to create a situation where almost a unanimous vote of Iraqis is that things have gotten worse than they were under Saddam Hussein. The 66%, two-thirds, and remember this includes Kurds that are generally pro-American, so you can probably make it closer to 75 or 80% in the rest of the country, want the U.S. out now. We also had a couple of other polls that came out this week. The Washington Post, NBC News and Wall Street Journal report that 27% of Americans, a remarkably small number, approving of Bush's handling of the war. That's down from 34%, an 11-point drop since October, just in a month and a half. Pre-election to post-election. And then the Washington Post ABC poll showing that nearly 80% of Americans support the recommendations of the Iraq Study Group, including to gradually draw down troops, to try and engage Syria and Iran, as we already talked about Condoleezza Rice referring it to out of hand, and so forth. And just a statistical note also that sometime during the holiday season, we will probably pass 3,000 U.S. soldiers dead in Iraq. It'll be a joyous, festive occasion for all, I'm sure.
As well as this week, we can now see lawmakers in the Beltway arguing over troop increases troop decreases doesn't even appear to be on the table.
No, it's looking increasingly like the way the Bush administration is going to go is to increase the number of U.S. troops in Iraq significantly. Where those troops are going to come from is anybody's guess, since they've been recycling and heavily using the troops that they do have, and they've still got to recruit and train their replacements, but somehow the politicians seem to think that they can do that, so that we just have an indefinite supply of cannon fodder, soldiers to go on to Iraq. And this is one of the reasons why there's been such a powerful anti-war movement that's developed among soldiers and among resistors to the war.
All right, moving over to adjoining Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, a lot going on in the Middle East this week. Saudi Arabia's ambassador to the United States abruptly quit this week, which you take that in combination with the fact that Saudi Arabia and five other Gulf states also announced this week that they intended to develop nuclear technology and nuclear weaponry to counter the program that they believe is in place in Iran. And their previous announcement that should the situation of the Sunnis in Iraq become dire, particularly if the U.S. decides to draw down or withdraw, that the Saudi Arabia would strongly consider entering the war on the side of the Sunnis, which would set up a direct competition, a proxy war, basically, between Saudi Arabia and Iran, the world's two largest oil producers. We had a number of things going on in Iraq and Palestine this week. Israel-Palestine. And in adjoining Lebanon, which is obviously heavily influenced by what happened in the war with Israel this summer, you had hundreds of thousands of people last Sunday who were demonstrating once again in Beirut for the removal of the current government. There's also a permanent encampment that's in place there. In Palestine, a lot's going on. Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Fatah party, has announced he's calling for early elections. That was rumored earlier on, and a Washington Post article on it went on in great length about the hardships that were being faced by Palestinians over this past year, but made no mention whatsoever of the U.S. or Israeli role in those hardships, either the military attacks by Israel or the economic boycotts launched by the United States and reinforced by Israel. So a really kind of appalling piece of mainstream media editorializing there that most people don't catch because it's what was missing rather than what was there that was important. We had a really unsavory chain of assassinations this week.
First of all, you had an official with the Fatah party who had his three young children assassinated. Then, apparently in revenge, you had the assassination of a Hamas judge. And last but not least, the prime minister of the Palestinian Authority parliament, who is a Hamas party member, was attacked in an attempted assassination. As a result, you have of these reprisals, you have Hamas and Fatah fighting openly in the streets in Gaza as the week draws to a close, and a real threat, both sides are saying, of a civil war there that nobody particularly wants to see, but nobody really knows how to stop. So that warning once again a couple weeks ago by the Jordanian King Abdullah that you could be seeing three civil wars as we head into 2007, one in Lebanon, one in Palestine, and one in Iraq, seems to be coming true very quickly.
All right. Anything else for that region?
No, that's one other thing, actually, that Prime Minister Olmert of Israel is mistakenly, while talking to a German interviewer this week, admitted something that Israel has not admitted publicly for, 30 years now, which is that Israel has nuclear weapons, to the surprise of absolutely nobody. But it was enough of a surprise that he actually admitted it, that that people are calling for his resignation in Israel.
All right, moving over to Latin America, General Augusto Pinochet.
Yeah, General Pinochet is still dead. He passed away this week at age 91, and the Bush family has got to be very relieved in that, both because Bush Sr., then involved in the CIA, was pretty much involved to his neck up in the coup in 1973 on 9/11, and as well as the Bush family, as we learned earlier in the past few weeks, as the Bush twins were both reportedly involved in the purchase of some land in northern Paraguay and were partying their way through Argentina until they got politely asked to leave the country. The Bush family still has plenty of ties to some unsavory folks in the southern part of Latin America, including some of the Nazis who used to work for George Bush Sr. And it's no surprise that the Bush family is fairly close to Augusto Pinochet. That's one reason why they're probably relieved that he would die, because if he ever got prosecuted for his many crimes against the Chilean people, those ties are more likely to come out. The second reason is that prosecuting Pinochet would have set a precedent of the international community being able to prosecute a former leader for war crimes committed on his watch. And guess what other world leader right now is very concerned about that potential kind of prosecution once he leaves office? His name is George, and he lives at the moment in Washington, D.C.
All right, and very briefly, didn't mention it last week, but Hugo Chavez.
Yes, speaking of Latin Americans who are more popular among some quarters than others in the United States, he won his term for re-election, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before, with a solid 61-39% of the vote. Of course, it was carried very dismissingly and very disparagingly, along with a lot of articles on how horrible Venezuela is in the U.S. press, but that would be, in fact, considered a landslide by any American political standard. And so we have him for another 6 years, and he came right out and said, you know, my victory is a defeat for George Bush. So we have a pretty good idea where that one's going.
Very quickly, events.
Yeah, tomorrow, 2 p.m. at the Wayward Cafe, the location being 901 Northeast 55th, between the U District and Roosevelt. Folks are going to have an organizing meeting for support in this area and a caravan to New Orleans for survivors of Hurricane Katrina.
All right. Talking as we do every week with Job Parrish, co-editor at Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State is still in the midst of its holiday fun drive. Gift subscriptions and T-shirts and just donations in general are, I think, an excellent idea. But then I'm biased about it. You can do that on the web through PayPal at www.eatthestate.org. All of our issues are also there. Well, all the ones that we print anyway. Some of our more personal issues are we keep hidden away. But you can also find us wherever we find free publications at bookstores, cafes, King County Library System, etc. If you have any questions, comments, tips, anything like that, the number is area code 206-719-6947.